Support for Commodity Week comes from the Friends of WILL and from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign. With crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Learn more at sfarmmarketing.com.
This is the August 17 edition of Commodity Week. Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists today include Matt Bennett, Bennett Consulting, Channel Seeds out of Windsor, Illinois, Steve Freed from ADM Investor Services in Chicago, Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois, and Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities in Newmarket, Indiana. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. Find all of our agricultural programming to listen to online, on demand at WILLAG.org. You can check it out in the NPR One app, in Stitcher, iTunes, and in Google Play as well. Now let's get a list of items we should discuss for the day. Matt Bennett, Bennett Consulting, what's on your mind?
I think a couple of things. First of all, I think I'll take the easy one. You know, what's the normal the weather that we're getting right now? What's that going to do for yields? How are we adjusting yields? A lot of folks are talking about coming off the 169.5. How far may we want to talk about coming off of that? Of course, we talk beans as well. And then the other thing is, you know, with a little bit of a downturn in the corn market, I'm just wondering what the rest of the panelists think about the, you know, the USDA's drop in corn exports, if they feel like that will come to pass, you know, alongside an increase in soybean exports.
Steve Freed of ADM.
Well, I think that, we kind of figure out if the USDA is going to make any changes or not. And in the ensuing reports, we've got the Pro Farmer Tour next week and try to focus on that. We have the funds adding to their shorts in wheat and taking out longs in corn, their short beans, and what do the funds do now? And then I guess one of the things that we're thinking about is, you know, what does the farmer do now? You know, is there things that he can do to try to, from a seasonal standpoint, to take advantage of some base hits? Because there probably won't be any home runs. And, boy, after the USDA report, it's going to be a struggle to try to rally prices. So just some ideas on what farmers can do.
Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities.
Oh, boy, I'm thinking the same line as Matt and Steve both there. Yield production prospects, what to look for here as we move into next week, big crop tour. But the main concern is there's going to be, you know, 2.3 billion bushels of old corn still around, and there's still some marketing that needs to be done on it. But new crop sales, surveys show that sold percentage 0 to 25%, about 60% of the producers are in that bracket there. So not a whole lot of new crops sold, so maybe share some ideas there.
And Wayne Nelson, I'm going to let you off the hook at this point, unless you've got something you want to make sure we get in, and ask you instead about farmer feelings as it relates to what they're seeing in their fields and what they're telling you about the size of the corn crop. Have they been talking to you or sending things along to you?
Yeah, we've seen a lot of stuff come in a lot of different areas. And Todd, one of the things that they're talking about is the variability in the population stand being down a little bit. We know that some areas are very good, and we supposedly hear there's some very bad, and wondering if Pro Farmer will stop any of those bad fields and see what they look like and what's going on. But we got one email this afternoon. It had the ears in it, and it figured out it's a real good yield. But then when they broke them open, they were very, very shallow kernels, and we wonder how widespread the shallow and maybe the test weight's going to be on some of this corn this year. So I think it's going to be, there's that 3 to 5 bushel differential that might happen if these kernels are very shallow instead of good deep kernels.
I'll point out that USDA, when it measures, does length and weight rather than number around and number of kernels long to figure out what the yield would be in any particular field. So that takes care of that one issue as it relates to USDA reports, but not as it relates to the Farm Futures Midwest Crop Tour. And I know, Matt, that you'll be headed out on that tour. How do they tell you to measure corn? You've been there several years in a row.
Yeah, you do take, you know, how many it is around. You know, you count kernels around, and then you take length. As far as the population, actually, you have you take a rope out in the field and you count a couple of different rows and you take the average number of ears, viable ears for the population. And so it's, you know, it's fairly consistent. I mean, it's actually supposed to be 100% consistent on which ears you pull. I believe it's like the third, ninth, and the 15th maybe, or something of that order. And so every time you go out in the field, I mean, they tell you if one of those 3 years is a junk ear, you still have to pull it. And so that's how they come up with their yield calculations.
And when you stop, is it every 20 miles and then the first cornfield? And how deep do you go in?
Yeah, I mean, they give you a map. I mean, they want you to stay on the highlighted route that they've made for you. And so, yeah, they would like for you to pull something out of at least every county that you're in. And so essentially, you'll go, a lot of people go 15, 20 miles. You kind of get a handle on how many stops you can make a day and still make your destination, and you don't want to skip any counties, I think is one of the biggest things I always try to remember. But when you pull up to the field, then, you know, you want to go past the end rows, I believe, about 100 paces. And so they're trying to get you into a similar spot in the field in every field that you go into.
And if you walk into a drawn out spot?
Then you walk into a drowned out spot, and it's just kind of the luck of the draw. And so you don't want to be cherry picking. Obviously, you don't want to be looking for great spots or bad spots. You just want to try to keep it as consistent as possible.
And you have been just in some of the areas that you'll be back in next week on that tour. So you were in the Dakotas and Minnesota over the last week. What did it look like?
Actually, it looked pretty darn good in north of Fargo, where I was at, and on the east side of the state. You know, I think whenever you're in maybe the eastern third or so of the Dakotas, you're in pretty good shape. Yesterday, I got west and north of Mitchell, a couple, 3 hours, and some of the corn in there is just plain awful. But I don't know that we're talking about a significant amount of acres, to be fair about it. In Minnesota, I thought the corn looked pretty darn good. I think the thing that producers told me in all three areas I was at, or, you know, the three good areas, including Mitchell, is that we're going to have a pretty good corn crop. We're definitely not going to have a record corn crop, but it's going to be good, you know, APH good most likely, but not much above that.
And in Illinois, Indiana, Iowa, what are your thoughts?
I think it's extremely variable, like Wayne was talking. I think the thing that that jumps out to me when we're talking yield, you know, especially in Illinois, Indiana, and Iowa, is that you are going to have significant variability. I don't know that that implied ear weight is something that I want to hang my hat on just yet. I think whenever I look at the report, you know, population, if you're doing stand counts, it's not going to be able to go up any. I mean, population is what it is. If anything, it's got room to come down if you have major pollination issues or blank stalks. And so, you know, I think that in those three states, you're going to come into a county and you might have a 250 bushel yield where a guy got rain, and then you're going to drive 2 miles down the road. And if you can stop again, you might be looking at 150. And I just think you're going to see that all over. I know the producers have been out in their field have overwhelmingly said that that's the case this year, especially in the I states.
Steve Fried, you wanted to talk a little bit about the USDA reports. We've set the stage with what the Farm Futures Tour might look like next week. The USDA said the corn crop was 169.5 this time around. They put the soybean yield at 49.5. I'm wondering whether you think those will go up or down as we move through the months of September, October, and November.
Well, I guess I would first say that as far as analyst groups are concerned, it's one of the biggest misses that we've seen on an August crop report. And so I think the group, as a group, people were thinking for lower yield, especially in beans, and not a higher yield. So I think probably the consensus is that, you know, get through this tour, and we haven't had a lot of rain, but we haven't had a lot of hot temperatures either. So you would think maybe the yields will come down a little bit. The one variable that it's hard for us to figure in is just these hybrids and the genetics. And are we looking at, you know, just something that's coming up with a higher low yield than what we've ever seen before, even if the weather isn't perfect. I think that the USDA is defending their methodology. They said they didn't do anything different on this report, although they tended to lean a little bit more on the farmer survey because they really didn't have anything out of the fields and objective yield survey. And maybe the ear weight and size will be a little bit less than what they got plugged in as an average. Maybe the pod count and pod seed size will be a little bit less than what they've got plugged in. But I don't think if they do come down, it's going to make a big difference in the carryouts, and probably won't make a big difference in the carryout. The only problem is that funds tend to trade the numbers. We saw that last Thursday when they saw the bigger than expected bean number and just trashed the bean price. So I don't expect big changes. I think the market would expect a little bit lower, but I doubt if it makes a big difference in the price.
And to put some of that in context as to what the trade had been expecting and what those numbers ended up being, the trade was looking for 166.2 bushel the acre on the corn when the August report came out on the 10th. It ended up at 169.5, and the soybean yield was expected to be about 47.5. And August from USDA was 49.5. By the way, last year's yields at the end of the year were 174.6 nationally for corn and 52.1 for soybeans. I think many people, Kurt Kimmel, will be wondering about the new crop corn, but particularly there will be a whole lot of folks that still have old crop corn that they have to do something with. Do you have ideas?
Yeah, but first I just want to tackle the Pro Farmer Farm Journal crop tour along with the USDA numbers. When you look at the USDA report and put on change from the previous year, it kind of looks like a political map in a sense. You got red for deficit states, you got blue for improvement, you know, particularly Alabama, 45 bushels above a year ago. So when they did this, took this survey here, the justification for the higher yield was they added 2.5 bushels per acre, mainly from the south and the northeast. So when you look at the improvement there and better production prospects there, that could justify that 169 yield. Now, when we see the Farm Journal crop tour take place, they're going to mainly focus on the deficit states. And I think that we could probably see a little bit more of a positive spin next week because they're going to be in the areas of high vulnerability. And I think the observations they relay back to the public from their findings could help the market maybe find some direction here on where we're at. As far as old crop, new crop, basis has just been tanked in through here. It's kind of hard to give up ownership here with the wide basis levels. When you look on out and carry in the marketplace, I think you got to look at hedging and try to capture some carry. The concern is a year ago, you know, the elevators called a lot of guys on whether they want to pay another in charge. I think if you do get that phone call, I think you pay the in charge because we feel 30 days from now in here basis will be better than it is today, and it'll make up the difference for what you have to pay for carrying that over into September.
And Kurt, kindly thank you for correcting me. I'm pretty sure I said Farm Futures and we've said Pro Farmer, but it really is Farm Journal for the Midwest Crop Tour. And of course, that would be easiest. Ag Days part of that company, Ag Web part of that company, of course, Pro Farmer, and under the umbrella of Farm Journal. So it is the Farm Journal Midwest Crop Tour, and you can always find them. And then, of course, Chip Flory will be out in Chip's afternoon program, which airs at 2 o'clock in the afternoon on many radio stations, about the same time the Closing Mark Report, actually same time the Closing Mark Report airs on several radio stations, is called Market Rally, and you can catch it online too. So and that's a good program to listen to as well. Okay, so Wayne Nelson, back to the old crop corn, and I'm wondering whether you think that this will be a year where we round out a bottom sometime earlier in the season rather than late.
It does seem like that's probably going to happen. I know as you look at the different cycles that people have been talking about ever, that we're starting or should be getting start into that. And somehow between now, the end of the month, and the September crop report, we expect to find a bottom. And it should be a long-term bottom. And I think that we can, you know, we don't have to rock it out of here, but I think that we're going to see farmers selling pretty light. I mean, as far as going into this harvest for the basis is terribly wide and at lower prices. We will see some, of course, but I think we're going to see the basis levels pulled in a little bit by the ethanol plants. They're continuing to produce ethanol real well. And it's, you know, moving down around areas that way. But a lot because of a little later, because of the way the crop was put in and had to be replanted and stuff that way, I think we'll have a chance, like Kurt said, to move this old crop corn at a little better basis in probably in the next 3 weeks.
Steve Freed, this relates to the seasonals I think you wanted to discuss. Where do we stand in your opinion?
Well, I think there's been a few analysts who have tried to look at that scenario, and after the crop report and looking at all the fundamentals, they would suggest that beans might continue to trend lower, maybe into the first of the year, and then we start trading the South American weather. Just on the positive side, China maybe has bought as much as 30 cargoes of U.S. beans in the last couple of days, which is supportive, but there's a lot of beans out there that have yet to be sold with this crop size. For corn, they're looking for a December low, so we might drift a little bit lower into December and then make a low and then move higher. So it's kind of the normal seasonal trend, lower into harvest, rally into January based on South American weather uncertainty. If everything's okay, you make a Feb low, and then you rally into May and June next year on just what kind of weather we're going to have.
And you wanted to talk also about fund positions and how they have changed or are in the midst of changing at this time. What have funds done in the last week?
About a month ago, the funds got pretty upset or aggravated with the way we were trading in the grains. So, we'd overnight, the European model was dry, and then at noon, the American model went. So they basically started getting out of our markets, and they have a very small position in our markets. And they could come back in, but, except for today, they've seen an uptrend in the stock market, and they've seen a pretty good bounce in crude oil, and the dollar had been going lower. So there were other markets in which they thought might be a little bit trendier market than the volatility that we see in the grains. I think that they might come in here and look to buy the harvest lows going into the South American weather, especially if China is a buyer. But right now, they're pretty much on the sidelines waiting for opportunities.
And one more question for you, Steve, and I'd like Matt for you to take this on as well, because it was in your list of things to talk about. But the export market for corn, is it as vibrant, do you think, as it has been in the last 6 months? I know Mexico has begun to drop off some.
Well, I mean, the numbers that the USDA put out suggest that this next year we're going to be shipping 500 million bushels less corn out of this country than last year. And I think a lot of it has to do with last year. Brazil had a poor crop. This year they had a record crop. They got about 40 million tons more corn that they need to sell. The only problem of that is if you back off currencies to the northern Brazil farmer, he's getting about $1.60 for his corn, and he doesn't want to sell it. So they've been putting it into bags, and they've been trying to use every storage they possibly can to hold off. So the corn market, both here and in Brazil, has a lot of corn to be sold, old and new, but right now the price is not right, and the farmer doesn't want to sell. So on one hand, that could be supportive, maybe to the basis, but on the other hand, at some point in time, they're going to have to sell. So the export activity out of the corn out of the U.S. Is not going to be as bright as it was last year, and you can see that in the basis and how wide it is right now relative to normal.
I think whenever I look at the export situation, I guess a couple of things. We're fairly competitive, I think, again, on the world market. I guess if you're going to see these types of prices, in my opinion, I don't know that I'm going to jump on board and say that we're going to be that far off on exports than what we were this year. And so, I think moving forward, a couple of things jump out to me. The Brazilian farmer, it's been, fairly well talked about recently that they didn't make a lot of money on corn. And some are suggesting that the drop in corn planted acreage could be, significant potentially. And so if that is the case, later on in the year, does that mean we're going to pick up some export business we're not really thinking about. And so I don't know that I want to say we're going to drop as much as what the USDA is saying just yet. I think that I see a little bit more optimism on down the road, but I certainly don't think that that's going to happen until you get later into our marketing year.
Kurt Kimmel, what do you think yields will do from here going forward for both corn and soybeans? I mean, we sit really at the 169.5, and we have to take that at face value, relatively speaking, from USDA, and the 49.5 for the soybeans. Are these the biggest of the year, and will they drop?
I kind of feel that's probably the largest number we'll see. I believe if you would resurvey today that those who did pass on what they were looking at would probably reevaluate it. We've seen some deterioration. Then plus two, when you look at tip back, I think guys would actually pull back some shucks and count kernels. I think you got to back off somewhat. It is so highly variable, that's going to be something they're going to debate clear into the January report, because not only from field to field or one part of the field to another part of the field, you just go down a row, and if you pick the ears you're supposed to pick, you'll see the variability amongst the different ears in one row. So I think we could back off some. It's not going to be a disaster, because there are some 250 bushel yields out there along with some 50 bushels, and how that averages out, that's just going to take some time. I feel we're in this 166 area. It's just going to take time to get there.
Where does everybody else stand today? So Kurt says 166. USDA's at 169.5. Wayne, how about you? What do you think?
164. I'm a little bit less. I think that there's a little more variability. I think the corn kernels the people have been out testing, who I'm talking to, are seeing that they're shorter, they're not as deep. We got the best attitude of what happened in the Dakotas out there. With Matt told us that half of it looks pretty good and half of it looks pretty bad. And we've been thinking it was like all destroyed from everything everybody said for a long time. Nebraska has a lot of irrigated corn, and they've got a lot of rain here lately. And northern Illinois, if it hasn't been overwatered, has got some really good corn too. But we've got a lot of corn that isn't just top-notch, and I think that can pull us down that other 4 to 5 bushels.
Well, I may as well get the other two of you. Matt Bennett?
Yeah, I mean, I'm closer to what Wayne's talking. I mean, funny thing for me, I guess, last time I was on U.S. Farm Report, they asked me, and that was in July, before the forecast for August changed, and I said, I think we could be clear down at 162.5 because of all of the areas in drought that just continued to grow. I do think that the weather in August has been conducive to saving bushels, if nothing else, and in some of the areas Wayne was talking about, actually building a little bit better year for harvest time and for test weights. And so, I'm probably not too far from where Wayne's at. I think when it's all said and done, we've got a decent chance of getting under 165, but I'm like Kurt as well. It's going to take a little time to get there.
By the way, the temperatures this month are on track for the coolest August, one of the top 20 coolest August since we've been keeping records since the 1800s. Where do you stand?
Yeah, well, hold on, Todd. Could I say something on that real quick?
Yeah.
In the Dakotas, those guys, and in northern Illinois and parts of Iowa, I'm here in Minnesota as well, producers are extremely concerned about frost at this point. And I think that obviously a lot of these folks are way behind. It was one thing that I heard in great fashion yesterday in Mitchell, is that, man, we are going to have to get a normal to late frost, or we're going to be in deep trouble, because they're just behind, and these cooler temperatures are doing nothing to help that situation.
Yeah, so repeat that again, because people will hear they're concerned about a frost, and we've been having some of that discussion about a frost and early frost, but you're saying late, or that they're late enough that a normal frost might catch them.
Some of them are very concerned about that, yes, and I've heard the same thing when you get, for instance, around I-80 and north, in Illinois, in northern Iowa, and then in Minnesota, Wisconsin, a lot of the producers are talking, a lot of these guys didn't get in the field until mid to late May in some cases, which is just not a very good thing to see whenever you're looking at, as you're saying, an extremely cool August. And so, that would be one thing that could significantly change this market pretty quickly. And it's not too hard to fathom something like that happening with the temperatures trending the way that they have recently.
Wayne, I hear too many meteorologists over the time. Was it Eric Snodgrass that gave us that number on Wednesday night in Watsika about this being one of the coolest, or did I get that from, I may have gotten that from Mike Tenora today.
He mentioned some of that. What he did mention was he didn't feel he could predict an early frost more than 10 days before the frost would be coming because he needed to see the setup setting up that way. But we have heard at least one other meteorologist that we did a meeting with together, Todd, that was talking about the chance of the frost coming in most any time after the 15th of September, and it thought it looked very good for that, too. So there's a lot of frost talk out there, but I think Eric told us last night that basically a cool August had no real correlation. It was like a shotgun was shot at it when you put the early frost or the cool August and then the frost dates up there. So I don't think that's something we can hang our hat on yet, but I think what Matt is saying it's very, very true. We do have to keep watching as we get close to the middle of September, after the first or second week of September, and see if that could happen, because they will have some real good ideas by then, and that could really take the quality of this crop down hard. Not the bushels as much, but the quality.
Yeah, so with Eric, I know, because he's on Friday, so we've already heard it, but with Eric, all five of the meteorologists on the air have said the same thing, that it's just too hard to correlate an August temperature with an early frost. But again, Matt's talking about an average frost potentially being a problem for some of this corn crop, given the really cool conditions in August, which would have slowed down the growing degree days and maybe put that crop far enough back that it would be in a problem. Steve Fried, I bet you thought I forgot I didn't get a number from you on corn yield. What are you working with these days?
Well, I'm kind of staying with the number that I've been using all year at 166. And again, we may not know that until the January crop report or at least the December stocks report. And, you know, what if they've underestimated last year's crop? So, you know, there's a lot of variables that go into that. And our weather guy also feels that there's that window September 15th to 25th that there might be colder than normal temperatures across the Midwest. And he is already forecasting a colder than normal October and November. Today, the National Weather Service, NOAA, came out, and they really didn't show that. They didn't show any cold temperatures for the Midwest over the next 30 to 90 days. So they're not necessarily in agreement with the private forecasters, at least today. But so anyway, I'll stick with 166 until the USDA proves me wrong.
And let's get a final word from each of you at this point. Matt Bennett, I think we can start with you.
Well, I think if we move towards into harvest, several of us have said here, some of this old corn, we probably ought to be patient. I think that the market's telling us with some carry for both corn and beans that maybe we could get rewarded by being patient. So I don't want to make any hair trigger moves. Definitely want to be working with my profitability spreadsheets and make sure that I'm not making unprofitable sales just for the sake of making sales.
Kurt Kimmel, your thoughts?
Well, I think there's some opportunity looking at the carry in the market. You know, it's been mentioned, if you look at on out to, for example, the July futures here, and pencil in, you know, we're at 388, you know, move above $4. If you could lock that in, there could be some opportunities, particularly on farm storage, to store this thing until basis levels improve. But there's a lot of things to do, smash sitting down and mapping out what's best for your own situation.
Wayne Nelson.
I think if we get some good basis levels for a chance, don't look at flat price. Sell the basis levels to get some of this crop moved out so you got room to store everything, and go ahead and replace some of that on the board if need be, if it is, you know, like Matt said, under production costs that way. But I think we're going to see some chances to do that, especially if you're around ethanol plants.
And finally, Steve Fried.
I think I would be thinking about selling something on the carry and for next year, and looking for some basis appreciation to sell some more, and then look at some of the seasonals, maybe buying the harvest lows, looking for a bounce to January, and then buying the Feb lows, looking for next year a bounce into June to try to add to the bottom line.
Commodity Week, of course, is a production of Illinois Public Media. You can find us online at willag.org, where you can listen to the whole of our program anytime you'd like on demand. Again, that's willag.org. Our thanks, of course, go to Matt Bennett of Bennett Consulting, Channel Seeds, along with Steve Freed of ADM, Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities, and Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities. And that wraps up the 17th day of August edition. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.